Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome back to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. I'm your host, Mark Daly, and yes, you do have the right show. A little bit of a change this week, just changing up the intros and things like that. Got some changes coming in the show here, and I was saying a long time ago, it was time, long overdue, to change the intro to the show, and I'm going to ponder on it, going to think about it for a little while. We're almost at the end of the season anyways, and I want to just get it completely 100% spot on when I do go break down and spend the money and get somebody to make the new intro. So anyways, welcome to the show. Yes, no race this weekend. Still digesting what happened in Turkey last week. It was, Formula One rarely disappoints, and that was quite an eventful Grand Prix. I mean, despite the fact that we've had such a weird season this year, and I mean, you would expect it would be, what with the weird year we've been just living in globally, just it's just been the strangest ever, of course, but it really was a standout race, and it was a great result and was fun to watch, and most importantly, despite all the chaos going on the track, nobody got hurt, and that's the main thing. So let's just dive right into it. There's lots to talk about this week, as there always is, and we're going to start first of all with the news that Toto Wolff, team principal at Mercedes Benz, says that the contract talks with now seven-time world champion Lewis Hamilton may have to wait until after the season is actually done. So, you know, that's not really too much of a surprise, and I really expect that this deal is going to get done. I still think that that Lewis, he said last week in the right after the race, a day or so afterwards, he said that he's just getting started in Formula One, or it feels like he's still getting started in Formula One. I mean, amazing to hear a guy that's seven-time world champion has got so many records to his credit. Feels like that there's still a lot that he has left to do in the sport. So I really do think it'll get done, but I wouldn't be surprised if it waits till after the season. I mean, well, with just a couple of races left, I mean, we're going to be done in just about 3.5 weeks' time from now, which is a bit sad. I mean, despite all the things that have gone on away from Formula One this year, I mean, it has been a welcome distraction from some of the realities that that we've been dealing with each and every day. Anyways, Toto had to say regarding the whole contract situation with Lewis Hamilton, quote, "I think more than likely we are looking towards the end of the year. Not that we wouldn't find time for each other, but I don't want to put ourselves under pressure to say that before Bahrain or Abu Dhabi, we will announce a new contract. There isn't any pressure. When it's done, it's done," end quote. So there you go. I still think, I think it's the third time I've said in the short segment so far, it's going to get done. I mean, the last time that these, they got together to actually do a contract a couple of years ago, they got it done in, I think it was 8 or 10 hours, and it was done in the course of a day. And I really think that, of course, Mercedes has the money to pay Lewis. He's entitled to a big raise, and I'm sure he's making a pretty decent paycheck to begin with, but the point, the fact of the matter is that this really is something that that it'll get sorted. I mean, it just has to get done at some point. But it doesn't make sense right now. I mean, there's so many other things going on. Just get the season behind you and look at it then. Anyways, Lewis just talking about the possibility of maybe being awarded a knighthood. He says he doesn't consider himself worthy of one, and he says that there's lots of other what he calls unsung heroes out there that are much more deserving of one of the honors that that is awarded by the Queen in her New Year's honors list. Anyways, the British royal family's official Twitter account did post something that they posted a message congratulating Lewis after his success, and I guess that has sparked a little bit of a speculation that that maybe Lewis is in line to get a knighthood or something like that at the end of the year at some point. Anyways, Lewis did have the following to say about it. "When I think about that honor, I think about the people like my granddad who served in the war. I think about Sir Captain Tom, who got knighted and waited 100 years for that incredible honor. The people that are running hospitals, the nurses and doctors who are saving lives during the hardest time ever. I think about those unsung heroes, and I don't look at myself as an unsung hero. I've not saved anybody. It's an incredible honor that a small group of people have had bestowed upon them. All I can say is standing on that podium, hearing the national anthem, I'm very, very proud. I'm a very proud Brit, and that, as I said before, really is like the most special moment to be able to represent, to be up there representing a nation, end quote. So yeah, I mean, the one thing that I find very, very refreshing about Lewis Hamilton, despite all the success that he's had, and of course, he has a wonderful life away from Formula One that is afforded to him by the money he's earned in the sport. He still strikes me as a guy that is fairly down to earth. I mean, he looks obviously very serious when he's out there racing. He seems to enjoy it. He seems to enjoy the wins and the championships and everything like that. And like I say, when I look at him, he just really strikes me as, despite all the glory and the honors and everything that he's achieved in the sport, he really does seem like a fairly down to earth, and for lack of a better term, he seems like a bit of a regular guy, to be quite honest. Anyways, Lewis did have to go on to say, quote, "There's more work to do here in the sport. I think this year we've had this awakening, and I think people hopefully are starting to be held accountable and holding themselves accountable, and realizing that that's actually not a bad thing. It just means we've got to work harder. We've not got to be so stubborn, open up our minds and educate ourselves a bit better so we can push for a more equal world. I'm not going to stop fighting for that. And then part-time, maybe I'll keep racing for a little while," end quote. So, well, I mean, Lewis did say that he'd like to stay in Formula One because some of the different initiatives that they've launched with sustainability and diversity within Formula One are two, what do you want to call it? Not projects, but two areas that he's very passionate about, and he wants to increase awareness in, and he wants to get involved in that if he can use his platform or the exposure that he has in Formula One, then that's something that that he would like to do. But interesting, you know, I mean, it is true. I mean, not very many people get awarded a knighthood, but you know, fairly down to earth, and I think a very real reaction from Lewis just regarding that. Anyways, moving on, Sebastian Vettel himself, a multiple world champion, doesn't have seven, but he has four, which is obviously very, very impressive, said that after the Turkish Grand Prix, he went over to Lewis Hamilton and told him how special it was to watch him make history in tying Michael Schumacher's seventh World Drivers Championship last Sunday. Anyways, Seb had to say, quote, "I told him it's very special for us because we can witness history being made today. I think he's the greatest of our era for sure. I think it is all is difficult to compare. How can you possibly compare Juan Manuel Fangio or Stirling Moss to our generation? You can't. Maybe we would be useless because we would all be shitting ourselves in those cars. Maybe they would be useless in our cars because they're way too fast. Who knows? But it doesn't matter. I think every era has its driver or its driver, and Lewis certainly is the greatest of our era. To me, certainly emotionally, Mike will always be the greatest driver, but there was no doubt that Lewis is the greatest in terms of what he has achieved. He's equaled the championships. He's won more races. He has a lot more pole positions, so I think he's done everything you can ask for. I think today is the best proof. It's a difficult race, a very difficult race to stay on track and 2 hours long, and probably, if we're honest, it wasn't his race to win, and he still won it. So I think, once again, he managed to pull out something special out of the bag, and therefore I think he deserves everything that he has achieved," end quote. Very classy, very sporting remarks from Sebastian Vettel, and it is special to watch records being broken. And I've said several times over the course of this year, when it was pretty obvious that Lewis was going to win the championship and equal Michael Schumacher's seven world championship record, that was something that I never thought that I would see equaled. I mean, it really is impressive that it's been done. And in a relatively short amount of time. I mean, Michael, of course, his big era of glory was, of course, in the early 2000s when Ferrari were at their absolute zenith. And, I mean, they really were an unbeatable combination. Michael Schumacher and Ferrari were just as dominant as Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes. That really is fascinating and interesting to watch that these two teams have had such unparalleled successes in their own respective eras in a relatively short amount of time. I know we're looking at about 20 years, but 20 years really isn't that big of a time, in my opinion, at any rate. But it is good to see that that these records can be matched and broken, and it really leads to the question, or ask the question, whether or not the person that is going to equal and beat Lewis Hamilton's records, is that person in Formula One right now? Is that person somewhere in a junior formula? Has that person even been born? We just don't know. And I think that's the fun part about motor racing. The fun part about sports is that these records are there, and it's fun to watch teams and drivers and different players, whatever the sport is, to watch people set these records and do these amazing things. But it's also fun. There is, I guess, some enjoyment in watching the thrill of pursuit, if you want to call it that, and watch these equally, or in some cases, even more talented athletes trying to match and catch the people that have gone before them as the years unfold. So I thought that was a very, very classy thing of Sebastian Vettel to say. But, you know, it was funny, too. I thought another part of that quote that really stood out for me is where he said it was a race that Lewis really probably wasn't on track to win. And somehow he still managed to do it. I mean, that just goes to show you that not only is he a great driver in the car, I mean, he's got a great car, but also on the pit wall. I mean, they were able to really make that those judgment calls and keep him out there. I mean, he only made one tire stop, and some other drivers went in there multiple times and could not do nearly as well as Lewis Hamilton. I mean, I honestly thought, I mean, considering where he started, you know, several rows back from the front in a very unusual spot to see not just one Mercedes but two, because Bottas didn't qualify all that great as well. But when you look at how the race started, Lewis, you know, he kind of hung back there for a little while, and it really didn't look like that at some point that race really was his. I mean, unfortunately for Lance Stroll, he had the problem with the greening on the tires, and that really affected his chance and opportunity to win that race. But Lewis, I mean, I guess you could say, well, some people have all the luck, but that really doesn't give credit to the guy in the car and the people on the pit wall and looking at all the data and giving him the best opportunity to win based on what's happening in his car and happening with his tires and so on. All right. Well, moving along, Ross Brawn, of course, who knows Michael Schumacher very well. Of course, he was technical director of Benetton and at Ferrari. He was also very, very important getting Lewis Hamilton to Mercedes before, starting to work with him in the first season with the team in 2013. Anyways, Ross had to say, quote, massive congratulations to Lewis. He showed why he's such an exceptional talent. It was the perfect demonstration of what he is, a 7-time world champion, equaling Michael's record. It's a kind of dominance that in most people's motorsport career you only see once. I've been blessed to see it twice. I've been fortunate to work with both Lewis and Michael. They are different characters, which is wonderful, and you don't want metronomic characters in Formula One. Lewis is different to Michael in the way that they approach things. At the core of it, they both have a God-given talent, end quote. So there you go. I mean, that is very, very true. I mean, despite the fact that Lewis Hamilton and Michael Schumacher are extremely talented drivers, I mean, they are just really a cut above everybody else. And it really just comes down to the natural talent that they possess. I mean, it's something you just can't learn. It's something that you can't be taught. I mean, talent is something that can be nurtured and built upon. But, it really is interesting, too. I mean, I can't remember. It's in my collection here somewhere. It was a book that was written about Michael Schumacher by James Allen. And I'm just struggling to remember what the name of it is. But, I mean, it talks about his time in Formula One. And it really is interesting I'll pull the title out sometime, remind you guys next week, or just go and Google it yourselves. But it really is interesting to get some of these looks behind the helmet, out of the car, and just how Michael Schumacher was and how he kind of grew up in motorsport and everything he did, and just his mindset to a lot of things. And it is true. I mean, I think too, when you look at guys say like Charles Leclerc and Max Verstappen, that these guys that are just they're the elites, the best of the best. I mean, there's 20 drivers in Formula One, they're all good. I mean, despite some of the criticisms I level here and there on a regular basis to some of the guys in Formula One, but I mean, they're all very talented drivers, but you have guys in there that are clearly cut above the rest. And, when you think about it too, I mean, I've made that comparison about Charles Leclerc. I mean, you look at him a couple of years ago in his first season with Sauber Alfa Romeo, and just the difference between himself and his teammate Marcus Ericsson at the time, that it wasn't a great car, that I believe it was the C37. 7 at the time. But I mean, he was able to get that car into Q2, get it into Q3. I mean, he has scored points with it in races. I mean, kind of, he had some struggles towards the end of the year, granted. But I mean, over the course of the entire season and 20 plus races, whatever we had a couple of years ago in Charles's rookie season, was that he was consistently better than his teammate. And of course, he only lasted a year there. Then he's over to Ferrari. And I mean, and I like Sebastian Vettel. I'm a fan of Sebastian Vettel. I like what he's done. I still think he's got something to do. You'll prove in Formula One. I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do at Aston Martin. But the thing is that it was pretty apparent straight away that, that there was a difference between Charles Leclerc and Sebastian Vettel. And as the season went on progressively over the course of 2019, especially by the time we got to Monza, and Charles was able to hold off the double challenge from both Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas and win that race in front of all the Tifosi at Monza. Really, I think that if there was ever any doubt left at that point as to whose team that was, I mean, you had Sebastian Vettel spinning in the very opening stages of the race and collecting Lance Stroll. And then, you know, that was basically him done from a point of that. I mean, he wasn't going to really contend for the win in that race, whereas Charles was out there leading the way for a long portion and came home. So, I mean, the thing is that these guys, I mean, Charles, I think, is one of these guys that you can get into a car and he can just drive everything to, regardless of how good or bad the car is. And I think that's very, very much in the same way that like a Lewis Hamilton or a Michael Schumacher, they're just they have this talent, they have something in them, this innate ability that really just sets them apart from other drivers. Anyways, time for a break here on the Overtime Media Network. And once again, I'd like to talk to you guys about MyBookie, because Formula One, NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball, late fall college ball, UFC Fight Island, whatever you're into, it's clear that because 2020 has been a year unlike any other is exactly the reason why you need a sports book with offers unlike any other. So get some skin in the game with MyBookie, where odds boosts, lightning deals, and free bets await all season long. And with Thanksgiving Turkey Day right around the corner next week, there really is no better time to feast on some NFL action. So whether you're a first-time customer or have been playing with MyBookie for years, there's no shortage of value to be found in the thousands of game lines, unique prop bets, and contests that they offer every single week. So sign up or get reloaded today, find an edge, and make your bet and get paid. MyBookie also boasts a fully-fledged casino platform, giving you access to all the classic table, slot, and card games you'd expect to find at your local spot. And the very best part is, at MyBookie, the doors never close, so you can continue to build your bankroll even after the stadium lights have gone out. So make the right play and sign up today at MyBookie. And when you do, use my special promo code OVERTIME to get your deposit matched halfway all the way up to $1,000. The terms are simple. You put in $200, they'll match you with another $100 in your account. If you are already planning to bet this season, this is free betting money. It's winning season at MyBookie, so come join in on all the fun and win some cash while you're at it. And when you sign up, make sure you use my special promo code OVERTIME to get your deposit matched halfway all the way up to $1,000. All right, well, welcome back to the show. And moving along, well, not really moving along, I'm going to stick with Ferrari. We're talking about Sebastian Vettel and his classy comments about watching Lewis making history last weekend. Anyways, Seb feels it was very, very important for Ferrari to actually get on the podium at the Turkish Grand Prix after, of course, they have had an extremely difficult and terrible year so far. I mean, Seb had a very, very good race this past weekend. He got into the top three very early on. And then, he started very well. He didn't make it into Q3. He only qualified 12th, but he had slipped down to fourth in the closing stages. And of course, his teammate Charles Leclerc was looking like he was going to lock up that third and final podium place, and made a late on the lunge to try and pass Sergio Perez. Couldn't make it stick, and then Seb benefited from that. But you know, it regardless if it was Sebastian Vettel or Charles Leclerc, I think that it I echo his sentiments that it was very important for Ferrari to get on the podium. I mean, they need something to build momentum. I mean, I would love to know what was said between them and the FIA after that investigation to their power unit last year. I think that even though the terms of it are secret, and I've said this quite a few times, that where there's smoke, there's fire, and the fact that these cars were so they're lacking horsepower this year. I mean, they're underpowered compared to everyone else, and the fact that there was a lot of speculation, and Max Verstappen even said it this time last year, that the Ferrari were out and out cheating with their power units, despite the fact that they were adamant that they'd done or they're doing nothing wrong, that the fact that they've really dropped off so far is it really is. I mean, it's speculation, of course, but it really makes you wonder. Anyways, Matteo Binotto, team principal of Ferrari, had to say about Seb's podium at the Turkish Grand Prix, quote, "I'm very pleased for Sebastian. I think a podium for him is very important. It has been a difficult season for him. I think he has started being, at least now at the end of the season, more comfortable with the car. He's driving better. He had a very good start, very consistent with good pace. He was managing the tires, managing to keep the positions and holding the positions. And overall, even on the last lap, he did well because he took the opportunity, and it's great for him. He just finished third, very close to Perez, but great. I'm happy for him. Still three races, and hopefully we will do as well in the next one." End quote. Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, it was important for Ferrari, but I think also for Sebastian Vettel. I mean, he's had, I wouldn't just say that this year's been a difficult year, but also last year as well. I mean, as we saw the order, the hierarchy at Ferrari flipped on its head last year. And I mean, he's been really stuck in a rut, and I think it's difficult and a bit of a shock, I think, that that he wasn't offered a new contract at Ferrari. I think the move to Racing Point / Aston Martin, I think, will be a good one. I think that Sebastian, I still think he's got quite a bit left in him. I think he obviously has something still to prove in Formula One. It's disappointing for him, obviously, that that he hasn't been able to win a championship with Ferrari. I mean, he came very, very close. 2018 was the year that if he was going to win a championship at all with Ferrari, 2018 was the year that it was going to happen. Even though by the end of the year, I mean, Lewis had firmly cemented that, and I mean, the gap wasn't as close as it was. But I mean, for a good portion of the year, I mean, that was Sebastian's championship. I mean, he was leading it for a while. I mean, it was very close. Closely matched to Lewis Hamilton, and even after the victory he had at Spa-Francorchamps after the summer break, still looking good. It wasn't until Monza that year we had a coming together with Lewis on the opening lap, and then struggled throughout that that last quarter ish of the season. But he still has a lot to give in Formula One. And I think what Binotto was saying is absolutely spot on. I mean, as important it was for the team, definitely important for Sebastian Vettel to get that that podium. Anyway, he says, sticking with the Ferrari, Seb says that Charles Leclerc shouldn't be angry about what he called an irrelevant podium miss. It was, I won't read it out exactly what Charles said on team radio after the race was over. It was full of expletives, and he was obviously upset with himself. This is nothing new. I mean, you go back last year to the Azerbaijan Grand Prix of Baku City during qualifying, Charles, it's very difficult where they go around the back of the circuit just around where the castle is. You know, I think it's only something like 3 meters wide. I mean, it's literally like threading the eye of the needle. And Charles just got that line a little bit wrong going into that that little left and right hand combo around the back of the around the castle, and put it into the barrier. And he got on the radio and he's like, I'm stupid. And he's very hard on himself, and very much after he let that that podium get away from him when he just made that that overtaking maneuver on Sergio Perez in one of the last corners, and then he couldn't make it stick, and the track being so greasy and slippery as it was gave Sebastian Vettel the opportunity to take third place. You know, he was, I mean, it was great for Sebastian. Obviously, he benefited from a podium that he wasn't expecting. But you know, I mean, it's obviously frustrating and upsetting for Charles. Anyways, Sebastian had something to say about that, and what maybe Charles could learn from that. And Sebastian Vettel had to say, "Quote: I think having Charles as a teammate, I often see myself in him. He's a lot younger. He's very quick, and I think the fact that, and I haven't had the chance to talk to him yet, but I will tell him later that being on the podium or not is a bit irrelevant for him. He has so many years ahead of him and so many podiums to come, which I'm sure of. It is right that he's angry. He did a mistake and lost the podium that way. But as I said, in the big picture, it is probably irrelevant for him." End quote. Yeah, I think that's true. But, I do agree with that to a certain point. But, I mean, when you're racing for Ferrari, when you've had a taste of success and, Charles, obviously, on his day is a very good driver. Well, I wouldn't say on his day. I mean, Sunday is usually his day. And I mean, he's a very, very quick driver. But I mean, it's been frustrating because he's had some opportunities to get away from him. And when I read Sebastian's comments about that, it was maybe a bit irrelevant for him to beat himself off up over one podium when there's going to be so many to come in the future. I mean, thing is, Charles is such a young driver. It's like saying the same thing when he had that mechanical problem in Bahrain last year when he was winning. And I mean, it was very, very frustrating. Everybody, I think, that day felt bitter and disappointed and upset that Charles got robbed of that win through a mechanical fault on his car. And if it wasn't for the two Renaults expiring when they did, right on the very last lap there, I mean, Charles wouldn't have even finished on the podium. And of course, there was a lot of things said at, some very similar things at the time that, as crushing and as disappointing as it is for Charles at this time. I mean, he's going to win a lot of races in the future. He's going to have a lot of podiums in the future. But, of course, it doesn't change, how you feel at the moment and the frustration and the disappointment. But, I think it's sort of a 50-50 thing. I agree with both of them, but I think, or Sebastian's comments there, but I think that just the fact that this year has been such a difficult year for Ferrari, not just for Sebastian, but also for Charles Leclerc, that regardless if the sky's still the limit for Charles Leclerc in a difficult year like it is, anything where you can have something that a result that is really maybe not just unexpected, but well, I guess it would have been unexpected when you look at it. I mean, considering where they were to get on the podium is what they've been aiming for, and certainly would have been validation that they're heading in the right direction. So definitely a tough pill for Charles Leclerc to swallow. All right. So just sticking with the theme of young drivers, Ross Brawn, the motorsport director of Formula One, he believes that Max Verstappen and Charles Leclerc, they actually, it was a little bit due to their inexperience in Formula One, being, fairly young guys in their early 20s, that and that it was the older, more experienced drivers that did better in the race. Just the fact that they've got all that many more years of experience in Formula One in some cases than Charles Leclerc and Max Verstappen, who both struggled. I mean, Max had a really big off there at one point when he was trying to pass Sergio Perez, but still, when he got that close, Max was flying. I mean, we all look forward to watching what Max Verstappen can do in the wet weather, but just watching how close he drew up the back of Sergio Perez, it just didn't look right. He just had a feeling that something bad was going to happen. Of course, and Max spun out. I mean, he was lucky. I mean, the most damage they did was actually flat spot his tires, but it was a difficult race. Anyways, Ross had he did elaborate more on this, and he had to say, quote, "What we saw was the old guard demonstrating their experience and the young pretenders showing that they have a bit more to learn. It was fascinating to watch Sebastian's performance this weekend. People are quick to write off any type of sportsman if they have had a quiet period. Sunday reminded us of his deep talent. He's a bit in the shadow of Charles this year, and coming to the end of his Ferrari marriage is not easy. So I think the Turkish Grand Prix was a great day for him. He didn't put a foot wrong and was ready to pounce when an opportunity came up. In contrast, the younger drivers, such as Charles and Max, made mistakes. They wouldn't have experienced a race like this before. It was a real challenge to judge how the tires would behave, how they would evolve, and anticipating where the tires would be in 10 or 20 laps time. And that's where the experience came in. But this will be another reference point in these young drivers' data bank. If we did another race in Turkey tomorrow, I'm sure a lot of them would approach it differently, end quote. And that's very, very true. It wasn't just, racing the conditions, but also, how the car was going to behave in those conditions and the tires and everything like that. And certainly, I mean, if you're a guy like Sebastian Vettel that has, so much more experience in Formula One, years and years of experience more than your teammates, and a guy like Max Verstappen, that might obviously have played into Sebastian's advantage. But I mean, as we were talking about in the previous article that we were just discussing, that Sebastian, he did benefit from that mistake from Charles Leclerc, and very much like Ross says, that if they ran a similar race in Turkey again in similar circumstances, that these young guys that might have learned a trick or two from last weekend's crazy chaotic race at the Istanbul circuit, and would have learned a lot. So I guess that as much as it kind of, for me this year, it kind of has worked and it hasn't, running these back-to-back races at some of the tracks, like we've seen at Silverstone and the Red Bull Ring and stuff. And I mean, of course, this year is a different year because of COVID and travel restrictions and health protocols and all that. And I totally get it. And I'm not going to be, sit here and act all spoiled and entitled about it, because I mean, I'm very grateful that we had a season at all. And the fact that not only did we have a season, but we weren't really off that much from the usual amount of races that we were supposed to get. But I mean, it has been interesting. I mean, we've seen a little bit of different conditions at the Red Bull Ring in the beginning of July, and Silverstone was interesting. But from that point of view, I don't know. It would be kind of fun to watch it again. And if it would, I think the difference though between, if we would say we had a back-to-back weekend in Turkey compared to Austria or the Silverstone, is the fact that the track, the pavement is so fresh at Istanbul, is that just because it was one way on race weekend, that it may not have been similar the week thereafter. Who knows? Maybe it would still be really, really slick. Maybe not. I mean, there were a lot of things going into it. I mean, the temperatures were really cold, the rain, the fact that the track had only been repaved and finished a couple of weeks or a week and a half before race day, all these different things that went into it. But certainly one thing is without doubt, like Ross said, is that regardless of what happened, that these young guys now have that benefit of having raced in a situation like we saw at the Turkish Grand Prix, and next time around is going to be very, very different. Anyways, time for another break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right. Well, welcome back to the show. And sticking with some of the, I think it's kind of sticking is an interesting kind of word to use. I mean, considering we're still talking about the Turkish Grand Prix, and sticking to the track is not something that a lot of the guys last weekend had much success in doing. But bad puns notwithstanding, it was a damaged front wing that caused Lance Stroll's significant and dramatic loss of pace race at the Turkish Grand Prix last weekend. I mean, that really was very, very disappointing to watch Lance. I mean, he qualified on pole. He looked very good through two-thirds of the race. But when he went in for that second set of inters, I mean, the way that he just dropped back through the running order was just, it was astonishing. It was really something else. The Racing Point did issue a statement. Lance, obviously, after the race, very frustrated and rightfully so. Racing Point had the following to say, quote, Lance complained of poor tire performance, significant understeer and graining from lap 17 onwards in the race. Pitting for a fresh set of intermediates on lap 36 failed to resolve the problem, with graining becoming even more severe. One of the strakes on the underside of the front wing came loose and lodged itself in such a way that a blockage caused significant loss of front downforce. The resultant loss of front downforce contributed to an increased levels of graining. Data during the race confirmed that there was significant loss of front downforce, but with no visible damage to the top side of the front wing combined with low grip conditions, it was difficult to confirm whether the data was correct. It was only after the race, when the car returned to the garage, that the damage of blockage to the underside of the front wing was discovered, end quote. Well, you know, I guess it's from one stance, you know, it's good to know that what caused the understeer problem, what caused the graining on the tires. But still, I mean, that's not going to make Lance feel that much much better. I suppose if they knew what it was, that they could have had the opportunity to change the front wing during the race, put something on or put a new one on, and then give him the opportunity, give him that, in theory, give him the performance back that he was lacking. But, you know, I guess it's like crying over spilt milk now. I mean, it's over. It's done with. I mean, Lance went from, standing on the step of the podium to almost finishing out of the points. Where did he finish down? Ninth in the end. So, I mean, it's great to know what the cause was, but that's not going to bring back that victory for Lance Stroll. Anyways, talking now about Lance's teammate, Sergio Perez. He says that that there was no team orders issued during the Turkish Grand Prix. And, you know, that it's very interesting because, I mean, we'd expect to see maybe some team orders in teams like Mercedes or Ferrari. I mean, we've heard Valtteri Bottas been asked to move over. I mean, it happens from time to time in Formula One in certain circumstances, but certainly with Racing Point, a team that we don't expect to see at the front, but we've seen them do pretty good throughout different races this year. They were actually, it became a discussion afterwards. Sergio had to say, quote, no, we are in a very tight fight for third in the constructors, and that's what really matters to us. So it was all about getting both cars as high as possible. I think the lead car at the time was Lance, and at the time we thought that was best to stop. That didn't work out for him, but in the end we managed to score good points. We outscored our competition, and there's still three very important races for us in the championship. So there you go, end quote. Really, I mean, if you look at the Constructors' Championship now, Renault's kind of dropped out of that picture a little bit. I mean, they had a disappointing race last weekend in Turkey. And I mean, there's only a couple of points now separating Racing Point and McLaren. So that's going to be a fun one. I mean, I've been watching that develop over the past several races. And what with three races left, I mean, Renault aren't really out of it yet. But I mean, It may just sort of be the beginning of the end of their challenge to that third spot in the Constructors' Championship. I mean, obviously, Mercedes have won it long ago, several races ago, and Red Bull have kind of had that locked up because they're in this weird kind of netherworld. I mean, they're much better, much quicker than teams like Racing Point and McLaren most of the time, and then you have Mercedes that just that much more further ahead and faster than they are. So it really, that third place in the constructors is the one to watch, and Sergio absolutely spot on that it is all about scoring as many points in the championship right now. And it would be cool to see. I mean, it would be different. There's been a lot of discussion about this pink Mercedes, but I think that discussion needs to be put to rest. I mean, obviously, Lance had issues that dropped him back. Perez finished very well, finished second. But regardless, I think maybe we can put that whole pink Mercedes discussion to bed. It was better than the works Mercedes this past weekend in Istanbul in the rain. So, I mean, it's had its moments. They obviously they had a lot of controversy that they faced. I mean, there was these legal challenges that were launched all the time, and I mean, they were snagged eventually on a technicality, not so much about the car itself, but the brake ducts that they thought they were all about these, listed parts and things like that. But I think I think this car, it stands on its own. It obviously draws heavy from the Mercedes W10 from last year. But, you know, as Otmar Safran, our team principal, said, is that, they took a lot of steps backwards before they started to get it figured out and got it working properly. And certainly it's really showed its potential from time to time this year. So Sergio Perez's, competition, if you want to call him that, Nico Hülkenberg, of course, former teammate at, would have been Force India at the time. So, Hülkenberg is one of these guys. I mean, he's deputized a couple times this year for Sergio Perez when he was sick with COVID. And his name has been thrown out there for a possible seat at Red Bull next year if Alex Albon isn't brought back. If he can't, make a case to stay there over the next couple of races, then it's very interesting. Of course, Hülkenberg, I think he's a good driver. I think he deserves to be in Formula One. Be interesting to see what he could do in a legit car like a Red Bull. Anyways, the Hulk had to say, quote, "Of course, I hope for a good return in the future, but there's nothing else to report. It is very, very quiet at the moment. The reports have calmed down a bit, and I think it'll be a while before there's really any final clarity," end quote. So there you go. It is kind of funny. I mean, the way that the season is playing out, it seemed like all the teams were kind of set, but then you hear like Haas decided to part ways with Magnussen and Grosjean. Mick Schumacher has been actually linked with one of those seats for next year. I mean, Gunther Steiner actually said not so long ago that they might actually go with a couple of rookies or young drivers next year. Then you got guys like Sergio Perez, who he's found himself without a seat at Racing Point for next year. His name has also been thrown in there for Red Bull as well. And Perez actually said that if he ends up having to leave F1 after this year, he says that he can do so with a lot of pride, which I think actually is fair enough. Sergio had to say, quote, "That one is not in my hands at the moment. I'm just focusing on finishing on a high. If the opportunity comes, great. If not, I'm prepared to stop for a year," end quote. So, yeah, I mean, the thing is, I mean, he might sit out for a year, but not really a great time, I know that other drivers have done it. It can't be easy, but I think it is interesting just the way that this driver's market is developing, and this Red Bull situation with Albon is certainly going to be interesting to watch over the weeks and months ahead to see how he does over the next couple of races before the end of the year, and then also what actually ends up with his status with Red Bull if they decide to keep him after this year or to bring somebody else in. And if they do, is it going to be an older driver like a Hülkenberg or a Perez? Wait and see. Should be a fun one to watch. Anyways, Danny Ricciardo says that that 2020 has been the most enjoyable and fun season for him in a good number of years. And Ricciardo, he's had some moments for sure. I mean, he's been on the podium a couple of times, and he's been in the points quite a few times. I mean, he's been, I think he's had a very, very good season thus far. I mean, he's sixth in the Drivers' Championship, so certainly a very, very good year for him. Anyways, Ricciardo had to say, quote, "I've probably had to look back on it when it's all said and done, but I think so far, yes. I mean, my enjoyment is really high at the moment. I'm loving racing, and I think that was also high from the kind of lockdown and missing the competition for a longer off season. So having it taken away, I think, made my desire to come back obviously a lot stronger. And yes, it's been cool. And you're probably right. 2016 was a really good year, I remember, with Red Bull. So this is probably the best, the most satisfying since then," end quote. So there you go. Ricciardo, and of course, Ricciardo, I mean, he's had a good season with Renault, but I mean, he's winding that up a couple more races. He's going to be done there. And then it's over to McLaren for 2021. And I find that kind of an interesting one. I mean, it almost seemed like he was so eager to jump away from Red Bull a couple of years ago into the first decent opportunity, first offer that he got. And, Well, it kind of seems, just from my point of view, it seems a little bit kind of too soon to jump away. I mean, they're going to be getting Fernando Alonso back here next year at Renault, and then Ricciardo going over to McLaren. And that one can only be judged in the future as whether that was a good move, a bad move, or a lateral move. I mean, at the moment, I mean, they're fairly similar in where they are in the in the running order in Formula One, and whether or not Renault has a big leap forward this year into next year, or McLaren, that remains to be seen. But Ricciardo, I think it was a gutsy call, maybe a little bit misguided what he did leaving Red Bull at the time, but you could see maybe why he would. But until this year, I don't think he really established himself last year as the out-and-out number one driver. I think Hulkenberg, when he was his teammate last year, acquitted himself pretty good. And this year, what with it being partnered up with Esteban Ocon, who I think is a talented driver, but I mean, still fairly young. And I mean, he just sat out for a year. I mean, he was reserve driver at Mercedes last year before he made the deal to go to Renault. I mean, he's still on the up and up. I mean, I don't know really how good Esteban Ocon is. I mean, he's definitely had some good races. He's had some good showings in Formula One in his brief time in the sport over the past couple of years. But Ricciardo, I think this year, he clearly has been the better of the two of them. But, you know, interesting and good to hear that Ricciardo's enjoying his racing, and it's going to be fun to watch what he can do at McLaren next year. But sticking with Ricciardo, he also said that that these low grip track surfaces would feel like what he calls robbery for Formula One teams that are asked to build the fastest racing cars in the world. And I mean, I think that's fine. I mean, I know that last week, Danny Ric was talking about the very greasy conditions that we had and slippery track surface that we saw in Turkey last year. But to me, that's all part of Formula One. I mean, as great as it is to see them race in optimal conditions all the time, it really is refreshing to see them have to race in adverse conditions like rain or these track conditions like we saw in Turkey, because it didn't out and out rain all the time during the course of that weekend. But I mean, if these are the best drivers in the best cars in the world, then you like to see that level of unpredictability thrown in there. I mean, occasionally you have a race in the rain. I think really does it adds something to Formula One, because if these guys are the best, then they should be the best in all conditions. So I understand Ricciardo's point of view there, but certainly I don't agree with that 100%. I like to see the way that it gets changed up, the unpredictability and the chaos that you see in sometimes in adverse weather conditions. Anyways, time for another break here on the Overtime Media Network. Please don't go away. Hang in there. We'll be back in just a moment.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510, is he declaring an emergency? There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, well, welcome back to the show. So sticking with Renault, Esteban Ocon said that he made the best start of 2020 so far at the Turkish Grand Prix this past weekend before it all went wrong and he spun out in the opening first turn. I mean, that wasn't really his fault. I mean, he got hit by his teammate Ricciardo, but Ricciardo found himself in a bit of a difficult situation in a bit of a sandwich going into turn one. And then Esteban got bumped off the track, and it was unfortunate. I mean, he did have a very good start, and he'd also been showing a little bit better in more recent races, but it wasn't meant to be. Anyways, Esteban had to say, quote, unfortunately, we got a flying start, and that was a brilliant thing. It was probably the best I've had in the year. Obviously, I went to third. I've had time to rewatch the video a little bit, and it's just very unfortunate incident, obviously, in turn one. Lewis was on the inside of Daniel, and Daniel opens the steering, and then he touched me on the rear, and that's what makes us spin. I got going again. I was still in pretty good shape, but then I got hit by a Valtteri into turn 9, which missed the braking point again. So twice the same, but that time I had to pit because of the puncture, end quote. So, yeah, I mean, obviously very, very disappointing. I mean, but that just is a Formula One. I still think that it's amazing that despite the conditions that we had, and even though that we saw that Alcon spun in the first corner, I mean, Bottas did the same thing, despite he wasn't actually touched by anyone else. It was a very, very good start for him. But I think for me, what was even more impressive is the fact that we saw a lap that had very little damage to it. I mean, just considering that he had so many cars going into that, you know, that fairly sharp left-hander into turn one at Turkey, that there were no major incidents, nobody crashed, nobody went into somebody else, nobody collected, you know, one of the other cars beside them. And I think that it was very, very impressive, because I remember sitting there watching the start of the race thinking, yeah, I wonder if we're going to have the safety car come out before we get through a couple of corners here. But, you know, they did really, really good to keep it clean. And the contact we saw, like between Ocon and Ricardo, was actually fairly small. And it wasn't really, too major of a thing. Anyways, kind of going from Esteban Ocon to Lando Norris. And Lando says that he made the worst start of everyone's career ever in Turkey. I mean, that's a bit of a dramatic overstatement. Lando, he got away from the line really, really bad. He had a bit of an issue with the anti-stall, and he was almost at the back of the running order before the first lap was even done. And then he did manage to gain a couple of spots back because Esteban Ocon and Valtteri Bottas just weren't having a great day and didn't have a good start to the race. Anyways, Lando would just say, quote, "It ended well. It didn't start well. There was a complete contrast, I think. Possibly the worst start of my career ever. Probably the worst start of everyone's career ever. But every time we got into clean air and we had some nice gaps in the car ahead, the car came alive and we had really good pace. But it was just always difficult to put yourself in clean air with a nice gap. It was a bit of a patient game that we had to play all the way through. The overtakes were nice. I got lucky with Daniel Ricciardo and George Russell because it's so difficult to overtake. You have to take some risks. Because there's one line you have to follow. As soon as you go off the line, you just lose the car. It was tricky, but I took the risks that I had to in order to finish," end quote. So, yeah, I mean, he did have a bad start, but I thought that was a little bit of a dramatic overstatement, but it was a bit humorous. Anyways, Carlos Sainz, who's at McLaren for a couple more races, is obviously going to be going to Ferrari for next year, says that the cuts that they're going to see to winter testing is really going to make his move to Ferrari all that more difficult. So drivers that are actually changing teams during this offseason will have less opportunities to test and drive their new cars, because there's only going to be one preseason test for next year, and that's going to be limited to just 3 days. So, I mean, it's gone back from 8 days to 6 days this year, and it's going to be cut again because, well, I mean, for one thing, I mean, the cars are going to be very much similar. I mean, they're going to be basically carried over from this year's car because of the, you know, I mean, the regulations have been frozen. And the new cars that new regs that we're going to see introduced next year have been delayed and pushed back into 2022. I mean, even without COVID, it was going to be a difficult thing for all the teams to get sorted out in time for 2022. So, I mean, it really did make a lot of sense to carry this current formula over for at least one more year. So, I mean, it is what it is to a certain extent. I mean, even though the cars are going to stay the same, I mean, Carlos is used to driving a McLaren and not a Ferrari. And there's only so much. I mean, you can do simulator work and things like that, of course, but there's really is no substitute for getting into that that car, getting out there and getting some real laps in. Anyways, Carlos had to say, quote, "As you can understand, a day and a half to be prepared for a season without knowing previously the car is practically impossible to be prepared for the first race. That will make my first half of the season at Ferrari very difficult. As for Fernando, Ricardo, and the other drivers who change of a team, I don't understand why it's only 3 days, so 1.5 days per driver. I'm not in favor of it, especially as there are no tests during the season," end quote. Well, I mean, I guess obviously, yeah, I mean, he's not going to be too excited about that. But I mean, at least he's not the only guy that's having to deal with it. And unfortunately, Carlos, it's just a reality, and you're gonna have to find a way around it. And it might be difficult, and it might not be the way that you want to start your career at Ferrari. But it's just the way that it is. I'm sorry, buddy. Anyways, just sticking with Carlos Sainz, Andrea Seidel, the team principal at McLaren, says that you can see now why Ferrari targeted him and why they were so keen to sign him to a contract for 2021. Anyways, Seidel had to say, quote, "A race like Turkey has just confirmed the quality that Carlos has. We know from previous races in the last years that he likes all these tricky conditions. He likes these wet or mixed conditions. We know that he's performing well in these conditions, and he has this talent to take the right approach in terms of risk, and he manages to keep the car on the track while making progress on the track and making the move stick like he did today, and it's simply a big benefit. Also, it helps if you have a driver that works for some time already with his engineer and his engineering team, because in conditions like today, you have a lot of communication ongoing between the driver and the pit wall. And there's also the experience Carlos has, because it's important to stay brief on the radio, calm, but also clear of what's going out there on the track. So we can match this with the data we see on the pit wall, and that makes them help them make the right decisions at the right time," end quote. So yeah, I mean, I think that Carlos has definitely shown some talent over time. But I mean, McLaren's a good team, don't get me wrong. I mean, they've definitely improved quite a bit from where they were a couple of years ago. But I mean, he's going to be going to Ferrari. I mean, he's going to the big boys now, and he's going to a whole different world of pressure and expectations and things like that. And I mean, he's certainly going to have his work cut out for them. I mean, I guess one thing that's saving him is that the Ferrari themselves are not really expecting to be competitive again until the new cars come out in 2022. So I take it for what it's worth. All right. Well, a couple more things just before we wrap it up here. We're sort of just getting to the end of the show for this week. Sebastian Vettel said he has zero tolerance for the crane incident we saw in Turkey during qualifying last week. Q2 began with the crane still in front of the crash barriers and was only being protected by a double waved yellow in that portion of the track, and you had the slippery conditions, and obviously. I mean, we all know what happened with Jules Bianchi at Suzuka a couple of years ago. Anyways, Seb had to say, quote, "I think we're all humans and mistakes happen, but this mistake has zero tolerance. I think we are all well aware, and I'm very confident that this will not happen in the future again. But we will talk about this and disclose the reasons why." So despite Sebastian's concerns, race director Michael Massey explained afterwards that why the crane was out there, and what they didn't wait, and why there was only double waved yellows. Anyway, so he felt that they were getting all the right information off the track, and that helped them make the right decisions. Anyways, Massey had to say, quote, "It was quite close to the barrier opening, and the crane was on the way. We were given assurances that it would be well and truly clear, and looking at everything, I was more than comfortable with the local assurances on that basis. With the benefit of hindsight, you would do something different, but based on it all and the available information at the time and that call that we made," end quote. Anyways, Massey did say that the FAA would go and review what happened, and so to make sure that similar situations or other mistakes aren't made in the future. Anyways, just a couple more stories here. One is Mario Isola, who's the boss of Pirelli's Formula One tire team, if you want to call them that. He's tested positive for COVID-19. Formula One issued a statement on Monday after the Grand Prix weekend, saying that Isola had tested positive for COVID after the race on Sunday. And this just came back as a positive result during the regular COVID testing schedule that they have. He's isolating. He was asymptomatic, and he was going to adhere to the local medical protocols. And everyone that he came into contact with had been retested, and no further cases were discovered. So let's just hope that not only he makes a full recovery, he doesn't get any sicker or sick at all, but that nobody that he came into contact gets sick. sick either. Now, just a couple more things just before I wrap it up here. They're both equally interesting. So Formula One is actually looking at a rotating 24-race calendar that they want to get to in a couple of years. So drivers and both team principals have saying that the 23 that we're going to have is going to be a very, very tough target, especially for a lot of the team members that have to travel. But anyways, Chase Carey, the CEO of Formula One, said, quote, "Looking beyond 2021, we feel great about the excitement from locations around the world in hosting Formula One. Many locations we raced at this year expressed great interest in new races, and other countries have stronger than ever interest. We expect to move to a 24-race calendar in the next few years, and we'll probably rotate a few races so we'll be able to accommodate a few new partners. But they will be limited as long-term partnerships continue to be our priority." End quote. Well, you know, I think this is I think this kind of works. I mean, we've seen some races kind of come in and out and disappear. We saw Malaysia disappear after being on the Formula One schedule for a long time. I mean, we've seen the German Grand Prix kind of float in and out. And I know that obviously they want longer term partnerships, but I think there's something to be said and something to explore to maybe rotate some of these different tracks in, like they're saying on for, you know, for different reasons. And I'd love to see some of these tracks that we've raced at this year back on Formula One. Maybe it doesn't make sense to work or race in Germany or Turkey each and every year, but maybe it makes sense to race there every other year. So maybe you can find a way to accommodate that as well. You know, as bringing in some new ones. And you know, they've hinted at this before. You know, going back quite a while now, ever since they took over Formula One, that there's a lot of interested parties out there. They said at one point, this is going back a couple of years, that that there was something like 40 interested venues or parties out there that wanted to hold or host a Formula One race. I mean, we saw Vietnam come, Zandvoort and the Dutch Grand Prix, which sadly was canceled. You know, there's been so many of them. You know, the possibility of racing, having another Grand Prix in the USA and Miami, although that's hit snags more due to problems in doing it properly and doing it right, and getting along with the local residents and things like that. But I mean, the interest is out there. So I mean, I know, just from a logistical point of view, it'll be a very big undertaking for Formula One, for the teams and everybody that participates. But I think that part of it is Formula One. I think Formula One is about pushing limits, and I certainly would not have any issues with a 24-race schedule. I mean, that's basically 50% of the year, 50% of your weekends out of an entire year sorted out. I mean, we're still pretty lucky to get as many as we do in the course of a regular year, but I'm in favor of it. I'd like to see it happen, and certainly I like this idea of rotating circuits. So anyways, a final story of the night. Next year, Aston Martin and Mercedes are going to share the safety car duties, and this is kind of cool. So Mercedes has been the sole provider of the safety car since 1996, they originally started out with a Mercedes AMG C36, although nowadays they're using a Mercedes AMG GTR, and I think it's kind of cool that they're going to be splitting it up. I mean, we're going to have 23 races next year, and there is a little bit more of a connection between the two. There's all these shareholding agreements and technical cooperation and things like that. So Mercedes has increased its stakeholding in Aston Martin to 20% and giving them access to a lot of their technologies, including powertrain and electric and electronic architecture and things like that. But kind of cool to see. Anyways, that is it for the show this week. Thank you so very much for downloading and listening. We got a couple more races left to go this year, and very much looking forward to those. And then, well, hopefully the off season goes quick, and it won't be too long before we get back to winter testing in the new year. Anyways, if you want to get in touch, by all means, please do so. Best way is to do so on Twitter at ScuderiaF1Pod or via email at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com. And that's it. That's a wrap. Take care. Have a great week. Talk to you guys again very, very soon. Bye for now. Ciao.